This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, good. Now we've started the agenda. Let's talk through the agenda really quickly. Most of this call will focus on the INTA survey results. Lori Shulman from INTA will be presenting that. Then we'll have a quick update on the public comments and the state of the draft report from Jean-Baptiste, and then any other business that folks would like to add. Before we get to that point, though, let me ask two questions first. Is there anyone on the phone who is not in Adobe Connect for housekeeping purposes? Okay, and secondly, has anyone updates to their statement of interest? Okay, let's go ahead and kick things off with the INTA survey. We've been excitedly waiting for this for quite a while, so highly appreciative of the fact that INTA's put it into the field, completed it, and now sharing it with the review team. I think everyone's familiar with the high-level goal of having a survey to look at the costs of the program to trademark holders in particular. And so with that, I will hand things over to Lori to walk us through a review of the report that they've completed. Thanks.
Hello. I want to make sure everybody can hear me. Thumbs up on hearing me?
Yep.
Good. Okay. Thank you. So basically, this report is a follow-up to the report I gave in Copenhagen. And the slides that we will be seeing today are simply high-level slides that I put together based on the results of the report, which is over 70 slides. The report is data-intensive, number-intensive. I think given the interest of this particular team, you'll be happy with the level of data that we've been able to produce. So I sent Elisa a full copy of the report that is free for you to look at, pass around. As of this moment, it is publicly released. INTA held it back because we wanted this group to be able to see the data before anybody else. So a few high-level leaders at INTA have seen the results. You will be seeing results, and then the rest of the community will see results. So I'm going to the next slide. Now, these few slides are repeats of what we saw in Copenhagen, but I did want to bring you up to date. If you recall, my update last time talked about the response rate to the report, the demographics of who actually answered, and some challenges that we had in terms of getting such a complex report answered in a timely way from corporate members who really don't have lots of time. But that being said, the survey opened in January 9th, closed on February 28th. Who responded and how in terms of the demographics is now available in the main report, slide 3. In my presentation, you'll see notations, report, slide, and a number. So for every high-level comment that's made here, the corresponding slide that substantiates the comment or refers directly to the comment is there. So it might be helpful for people to take this presentation that I'm giving today and just compare it to the main report. It will help you to dive into some of the information. So the report was sent to 1,096 INTA regular members. And I do want to note in the record that at the time I had used the number 1,700. That was not a correct number. I thought that we had sent to a subset of regular members, but in fact we had not. All 1,096 are what INTA considers regular members who hold portfolios. The questions that we used were based on CCTRT input and a worksheet that was put together by INTA to assist the survey respondents in preparing. We had 33 responses total out of the 1,096 that we sent. We had 32 for-profits and one non-for-profit. And as I mentioned before, all of this data has been analyzed, put into a formal report in PowerPoint format by Nielsen, and reported to the CCRT with a full copy. And I'm sure it will be posted to your list shortly if it hasn't been posted already. So I had gone over very quickly. I'll restate. We had 93 members enter the survey. Ultimately, 33 were completed, 48 were suspended. Some did not qualify for various reasons, and 3 were in the survey when it closed. The feedback that we got in terms of the challenges was that the survey was just too long. Even though we had prepared a worksheet and had guesstimated that the survey should take around 30 minutes to an hour, once the worksheet is prepared, we found the feedback to say no. The survey took a lot longer, the prep time was much longer, and many people reported spending 5 to 10 hours, which is an extraordinary amount of time to do a survey. Other feedback we got is that numbers that were asked for by the CCRT and INTA were really not kept the way we were asking for them, that the information was so confidential that even with a third-party provider and an NDA, there was no confidence in releasing the information, that the information was dispersed throughout the company. There wasn't a central repository for data, which made data gathering difficult. And again, that the worksheet did not correspond to all of the questions that required data. This was an interesting point because we had testers go in, do the worksheet, and take the survey. I was one of those testers. And even in the testing phase, we didn't point out the lack of correlation until the actual test was given. So we'll have to work harder and better on that for the next survey that we do. I will say this, though, that in response to the concern that the data was not being asked for in a way that company normally keeps records, INTA plans to update the worksheet and provide it as a tool for its members, and this should help in follow-up studies. And I want to say that this particular follow-up point corresponds directly to one of the recommendations made in your initial report, specifically that there should be ongoing data collection. So this will help in that endeavor, and INTA plans to do it independently with its members, but we would certainly be willing to share with the CCTRG for a wider community and a wider survey. So how do we make meaning of the data given that we had 33 respondents? We were hoping for perhaps 50. Nielsen was cautionary in saying that when we look at this data, given the response rate, that we look at the data more as an indicator of trends and not trends in and of themselves. So while the data may be factual and accurate, again, given the number of respondents, we always have that concern in the back of my mind that this, in the back of your mind, that this might indicate something greater, but we just don't have the numbers to support it at the moment. This was a new endeavor for INTA, and given that the survey was an onerous one in terms of data extraction, we're actually pleased with the participation of our members. This still reflected a 3% response rate, which is very good for any survey, and I think a survey of this complexity, it was fantastic. We as INTA aim to continue to review the GHLDs much more thoroughly, and this is the starting point. And the refinement of the survey worksheet, as I pointed out before, will be a centerpiece in this. Until we can get our members really focused on continual collection of data in a form that can be used to help advocate for our positions and substantiate arguments that we're making in terms of whether or not certain programs are effective or ineffective, we need to have consistency of data. The breakdown of the new TGLD report that was prepared by Nielsen follows the following outline. There's a background piece. There's a note on reading the report, which reflects some of the things I was saying in terms of the response rate. It talks about members who participated, summaries of key findings. There is a big section on domain activity, what kinds of names are being registered, how they're being registered, whether or not they're being parked, which is also another concern that I noted highlighted in your initial report. There's a section on enforcement costs that breaks the enforcement costs down to new GLDs, to UDRP, to complaints, to claims. They're very fact-specific in what enforcement means. There's behaviors, policies, and perceptions. This is where our members talk about issues like premium pricing, how they feel about the sunrise period. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence in this section. There's a summary of thoughts on slide 55. We have 2 appendices. We have additional verbatim comments from our members who had actually quite a lot to say about the RPMs and premium pricing. And we have the actual survey and worksheets for the groups you consider. Am I speaking too slow or too fast? Or does anybody have any questions before I move on?
You're doing very well.
Okay, then I will move on. I have a tendency to speak quickly and then overcompensate and speak slowly. So the first observation we have from this survey is that registrations of new TLDs are overwhelmingly defensive. The registration of new TLDs were to prevent someone else from registering. And I think it was 90% of the cases. Few of the respondents felt there were alternatives to consider, whether registering a new legacy or CCTLD. So this wasn't really an issue about choice, as much as it is making sure that someone else isn't getting a name that could cause you a lot of problems or cause a trademark owner a lot of problems if it's registered in the wrong hands. And this data is presented on study slide 9. The next observation is that trademark defense costs have increased as a result of the new TLD program. Average costs for all TLDs for 2 years were $228,000. For new TLDs for 2 years, $40,528, which represents approximately 7%. These figures are further broken down on slide 20. What was noted in the analysis as well in terms of spending and trends, we see relatively lower spending in new TLDs by virtue of the fact that they are new. But as they increase and their proportion in a portfolio increases, we would likely see the proportion of spending increase for defense as well. Essentially, new TLDs are parked. Domain names registered by brand owners and new TLDs are commonly parked and not creating value other than preventing unauthorized use by others. So this isn't a question of picking a new TLD that might have some interest in value and then you redirect it somewhere else because you think it's going to drive traffic. That doesn't appear to be the case in this study. And you can find those answers on study slide 9. The next interesting piece of data, I'm sorry, I'm sliding too fast. The next interesting piece of data is that company size does not correlate to company spend. Prior to having these results, we had anticipated it would be the larger companies spending the most money, and that is not the case. Actually, brand activity is the driving factor. And we have put a definition around brand activity so that the team could analyze what this means in terms of the program as a whole. Brand activity refers to the number of trademarks and how much activity is around trying to protect or expand them. So, for example, you can have a big company with one brand, but it's not in a very dynamic market, so much less would be spent. Or you could have two similarly sized companies and they still have variable costs because one has many brands, one has one brand, they may have different markets. So it's not about size as much as it is about quantity. We also learned that TMCH registrations are used by a majority of the respondents, 90%. And the costs run, you can see here, the average number is 15, and the average cost is $7,773 on the TMCH. It was a pretty wide range, $1 to $48,000 in terms of cost, and 0 to 148 in terms of TMCH registrations. And you can find this data on study slide 29. Generally, our members found that RPMs are helpful. Two-thirds of the respondents surveyed feel that UDRPs and required sunrise periods have helped mitigate risks to a major or moderate extent. I do believe this corresponds to a conclusion that you made in your initial report as well, if I remember correctly. You can find the data broken down in slide 51, and as I said, the whole section that discusses the TMCH, RPMs, premium pricing, all the issues surrounding launches in the new GTLD program, there's quite a amount of detailed information, and I felt it was too detailed to put in this particular presentation, as our own membership is also diving into the numbers and really trying to figure out what it means to the overall new GTLD program and brand owners. So we would certainly be open to, once this team has analyzed the data and reaches its conclusions, to get together once again to see if our thoughts about what these numbers represent are in alignment. Premium pricing. A lot of our members had a lot to say about premium pricing. 3/4 of the respondents evaluate premium pricing for domain names on a case-by-case basis. 2/3 of their domain decisions have been affected by premium pricing. And what I think is a very interesting number is 15% of the respondents refuse to pay premium pricing at all. So you do have a percentage of the brand-owning population that just will not pay premium pricing. So in terms of whether or not it's a good strategy overall, and how, from a trademark side, we don't support premium pricing. On the on your side of the house, in terms of selling domain names, whether or not it's worth it to run programs when you have a significant number of respondents just refusing to pay, I don't know how helpful that is either. And I think this is really going to have to be thoroughly sourced out, debated, and the numbers very carefully looked at. And you can see this data on study slide 48. The next is about who is data, which we've kind of known. I don't think it's a big surprise. But we have it here in terms of the respondents from the survey saying, among brand owners who have taken action against domain name registrants, more than 3 in 4 involve privacy and proxy services, and nearly 2/3 encounter some level of inaccurate, incomplete who is information. And this is a source of vexation for INTA members and has been so for years, as many in this group well known, but it's extremely difficult to get accurate information, to have effective enforcement, because we just don't know who owns a domain name. And in terms of the privacy proxy services, we know that there are plans to implement gated access, but those plans are slow to take root, and this remains an ongoing concern. You can find this data on study slide 41. The ultimate conclusion of the study is defense and not choice is driving domain purchases in the trademark community. While the goal of the new GTLD program was to increase choice, for brand owners, it doesn't seem to be about choice. It seems to be about defense. And this is, again, an issue that is of top concern simply because we do not feel that it's appropriate for the branding community to fund new GTLDs just out of a defensive posture. There has to be some other good business reason. Otherwise, this generation upon generation upon generation of new GTLDs just creates exponential defense issues. And I think this data is the beginning of finding out what those issues truly are. And there's even, you know, contention within our own community, and I'll be very open about that. We have some of our members who are very anxious to get started with .brand. And they feel that they can monetize these dot brands and use these dot brands in a way that drive a very good marketing strategy. And then we have other members who are constantly playing a game of whack-a-mole with new domain names and who are literally tracking tens of thousands of counterfeit domain sites, domains that are either hosting counterfeit goods or promoting counterfeit services. And this is an ongoing enforcement problem. I know that in the United States, some of the IP enforcement figures that I've seen is that there could be luxury brands out there that monitor literally 30 to 40,000 websites with counterfeit goods in any given period of time, and that's an extraordinary number. So what are the next steps? The full report has been presented to the CCGRT. As I said, it might be on your list now. I just don't know. Of course, you will review it. If you have questions or feel that you need a follow-up meeting or another presentation or some more consultation with INTA or with Nielsen, we can work that out or perhaps even set up more time in Johannesburg, if not before. And to reiterate that INTA understands the importance of data collection, we agree with the top priority and contention of this group that there needs to be more and continuous data and that INTA will be developing a tool for continuous tracking of costs of its members. Thank you.
Thanks, Laurie. It looks like we already have a question from Kylie, but I'll encourage others who have questions for Laurie to get in the queue. I have some questions myself. I'll put myself after Carlos, who's also raised his hand, and before Laurie. All right, so Kylie, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Well, this is the exit report. I just wonder, besides the full report, can this sound like an abstract of the full report? Is it made available to everybody of our team? If not,
yes.
Well, not yet, please do.
Yes, thank you. Please. So, I mean, what I could try to do is append this somehow in the room. The report is 75 slides, okay? And 20 of those 75 slides are the survey itself and some anecdotal evidence, war stories, so to speak, that support some of the contentions of the numbers. The actual numbers, the actual slides that contain data number about 50. So we hadn't really thought about paring that further down into an abstract, but we certainly could consider it. And I don't know if staff has the report now, is there some way of appending it into the chat so people could open it? I didn't know, and there isn't any way to look at two documents side by side in Adobe. We've tried to do that in another work groups, and I know we've never had good success. And I didn't want to confuse the high level points with the actual report, because going through 50 slides would take many hours given the density of the data.
The slides that you just showed sounds pretty much like an abstract of your full report. I'm just wondering if we can get both. And also, I just wonder is there a limitation among distribution, or to what extent would you like to keep it within a certain audience or what? Because this just like the data domain name parking, this might be a very serious issue, I mean, for China. So whether you would mind if I distribute this to some of my Chinese colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you, Kylie. So I'm going to answer all of your questions. If you look into the chat right now, there is a link to the full report, so you have it. This report is considered published. This report is considered published as of right now, so you are welcome to distribute it to anyone who you think has an interest in the report. So, yes, you can have two copies. In terms of limitation of distribution, given the amount of data we intended to collect, the size of the intimate membership, the composition of the intimate membership, there was a strategic decision made to limit the survey only to what INTA calls regular members or regular nonprofit members. And a regular member is an INTA member who is a trademark portfolio who owns and manages a portfolio. Now, there are some members of INTA, and there's Donuts, for example, that Donuts has a trademark. But Donuts is not considered a regular INTA member. Donuts is considered an associate member, a service provider. So we do have our membership composition is approximately 7,000. 1,000 of those members are what I would call hardcore brand managers. They may be Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofit organizations, sports associations, universities, anybody managing a brand. The other members are categorized as associates, which are typically law firms, service providers, which could be search firms, investigative firms, watch services, or registrars and registries who do provide services to INT trademark members. We had thought about sending it out to all the law firms, but the problem with the law firms is we had ran the risk of the lawyers sending multiple copies of this survey to members multiple times. It would have been very hard to track who was getting the survey and when. So for the ease of administration and to understand exactly the demographics of who would be answering, we limited it to that very defined universe of membership. And I think those were all of your questions. I hope I answered them all.
Laurie, I think Kylie had one other question, which is the slides that you presented today, can you give us, distribute a copy of those slides as well in addition to the full report?
Sure. You have a copy. You're welcome to post it as well. There's nothing secret about anything we're doing here.
Sure. All right, so we'll make sure the staff gets those distributed to members.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize for any typos in advance.
Thanks, Laurie. All right, I have Carlos next in the queue.
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Laurie. This is really interesting. I'm very interested in this slide 27 of the big presentation on the average cost. I guess this is difficult to discuss over a call, but I would like to know if there is a better breakdown of this cost or a better explanation how these costs were calculated. And to put it in form of a question, do you think it's possible or do you see out of the report the possibility of answering the following question? Can we get a differentiated feeling between the one-time cost of the assignment of new GTLDs as opposed to the permanent or running cost of these members of yours that work on protecting the brand? Because I think it makes a big difference, and they might have spent a lot of money. I don't know if I agree with your with the statement that cost might increase. I'm sure it was expensive in the first round during the delegation of new GTLDs, sunrise periods, whatever. But I would be careful to look very closely at the running cost. And try to avoid the feeling that the running costs are impacted by the new GTLDs, or the running costs are just impacted because they have more domain names to watch, and that's a totally different story in terms of the purpose of this review team. We are reviewing, in my view, the delegation process. And whatever happens later on with the people who have brands and so on, it's only indirectly related to this work. So if there is a link or a better explanation of slide, let me see again, 27, I think, or more input from Nielsen, I would be very grateful. And thank you again, Laurie.
Thank you, Carlos. I'm going to take a stab at that question. First of all, the costs we're talking about are defensive costs, so pure cost to defend. In terms of whether that's fixed at delegation or ongoing, I don't know that we parsed it out that specifically. And honestly, I would disagree with you that it's not just about the delegation, because as soon as you delegate, you have an ongoing life. I mean, that's the whole point. If you were to expend a cost to buy a domain name in year one, but then you don't count renewal costs in year two, three, five, whatever the period is, or you don't cost out what the claim service might be costing you in terms of as your portfolio grows and your GTLDs grow, I don't know. I see it as more dynamic and not fixed. But that being said, I understand what you're asking. What I would do is I would certainly direct you to the survey itself. The questions are broken down at the end of the slide, and if you went to the questions that talked about these expenses, you might for yourself see how we broke them down. I can't clearly answer beyond that. If you don't feel that that's sufficient, we certainly can make a notation, perhaps make some sort of follow-up question in the worksheet we're devising. But I note your concern, and I'm not sure that INTA would agree with the concern or not, but it's one that we would certainly evaluate. And
thank you. Thank you very much,
thank
Laurie.
Thank you.
I will follow up. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carlos. I think I put myself in the queue before Laureen. I have a bunch of questions, but I'll just ask one or two and then hand it over to Laureen. I guess, Laurie, one of the things that you point out in the slide is that there's a cost, I think you said, on average, it's about 7% of the total portfolio cost relates to new GTLDs. And then separately, that the sort of number of registrations scaled with the brand activity versus with the sort of size of the company. And I guess I'm curious if that sort of implies that you'd expect that 7% to sort of scale across companies as well. Not obviously not exactly 7% per company, but it seems like what you're saying is the companies that spend more on stuff related to their brands in general, presumably that includes other domain names not in the new GTLDs, are also spending more money on new GTLDs. So would you expect to find that, you know, like the relative proportion of the budget being spent on new GTLDs would look kind of consistent or scale, you know, like you say, scale with brand activity versus other factors?
Yeah, I would. My initial reaction is yes, I would expect it to scale as the programs grow, as the opportunities grow to this issue of choice. And even though choice does not seem to be a factor, I would imagine at some level choice does play into it, particularly if there's a lot of brand activity. If you're a company with multiple brands and multiple streams of commerce using multimedia outlets to market, it may make sense to use a dot something versus a dot com, you know, a dot new versus a dot com. And we don't have, I don't think we have that data today that would tell you definitively. But that was a conclusion that Nielsen reached. How they reached it, I'm not entirely sure, and I'm going to be the first to tell you. I've read this report probably four times. And on the fourth time, I'm still looking at numbers differently. I'm still trying to source out what can legitimately be imputed given the number of respondents and given the fact that the level of detail that we've asked for is not on the par with the level of detail of record keeping of our members. So there's a lot of factors in this. So I would say that, I think we look at this as trends. All of this is trends. And until we do another report, it will be very difficult to substantiate the trends.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Lori. So I'll ask one more quick question, then turn it over to Lorraine and maybe come back. You also mentioned that some of the RPMs were helpful, and you called out UDRP and Sunrise in particular. And something that's new in this round was the introduction of URS. Was there any reaction by INTA membership to the URS in the survey?
Yeah, there are. There is substantive data on the URS. I can't speak specifically to numbers off the top of my head, but there are slides in the deck that do focus on the URS. I will say that for many, the URS, we seem to have a split in the membership. Some find the URS very helpful as a deterrent. Others find the URS needless because the remedy for the URS, if you recall, is just suspending the delegation of the name, of the second level name. It isn't a transfer. It isn't it taking, you know, it isn't getting the name to a status where it couldn't be reissued to someone else. And that's a frustration for many trademark owners who do invest in the URS and would like to see a more permanent remedy. I've had others say to me they don't do URS. The reason they don't do URS is because they can't effectuate a domain name transfer into their portfolio. So my guess is this is going to be a balancing act that we'll have to look at the numbers and the anecdotes, because I think in this particular case you're going to learn a lot more from the stories than you may actually even learn from the numbers.
Okay, thanks, Lori. That's helpful. All right, I won't hog the mic. I will turn things over to Lorraine, and then Kylie's back in the queue, and I'll probably ask a couple more questions after that. Go ahead, Lorraine.
Thanks, Jordan. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Good. Okay. So, first of all, thank you, Lori. This is really, really interesting, particularly regarding the data, the expectations about the response rate to the survey, the ease of the survey, and then the contrast of the reality and possible answers to why those didn't sync up. I think that's really important for us as a review team to think about, since so many of our recommendations deal with gathering data, and this is such a great case study about challenges there and lessons learned. So thank you very much for the presentation and, of course, your organization for fielding this study. I was particularly interested by the statement you made about the trademark owners funding the new GTLD, and I realized, you know, that's sort of an aside, but I was wondering what, and if I missed this, I apologize, was there an analysis done of what percentage of new GTLDs were actually bought by the, you know, IP community for defensive purposes when compared to all the new GTLDs that were bought?
Hi, Lorraine. I think that's a fabulous question. I am not aware of an industry report. There was no way we could do that in our report because we were not surveying registrars and registries. We were only, we were only surveying our members. But what comes across, and I am going to use this figure, and I'm going to use it with a cautionary note that until more of our members look into the numbers, I may not be ready to say this is definitive, but one of the comments that I got internally, and I'll explain. So we got a final of the copy of the report maybe a month ago, not very long ago, and we had to go through it and, of course, correct some typos and formatting errors and look at the assumptions and make sure that they were aligned with how, you know, what actually happened inside the survey. And then it gets reviewed by the Internet Committee leadership. It gets reviewed by INTA senior staff, myself included, our CEO and our chief of policy. And then our comments go back to Nielsen, and the report gets finalized. And so we certainly did not adjust data or do anything to change outcomes. It was a question of what should the report look like and what would be the easiest way to access data to make it readable. So that's what we look at. So one of the things that went back and forth about this $40,000 number is my understanding is that in order for a registrar to qualify as a registrar and to start up a registrar's business, it takes about $25,000. That's the number that was not unsubstantiated. But the comment was made that, well, if it costs $25,000 per registrar and our members are spending $40,000, that's a little odd. Now, what that means in the long term, I don't know. I mean, that's going to be the responsibility of this team, your team, to review and into to review internally. But it looks like there may be some imbalance between sort of what it costs to do business, at least initially, and what trademark owners to, I think it was Carlos's point, what's the initial outlay versus ongoing outlay? I just think it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and since I don't have the data, I can't draw any conclusions, but just wearing my computer protection hat, let's say that a disproportionate, whatever that means, a disproportionate of the new GTLD program turned out, in fact, to be funded by defensive registrations. Well, that's almost akin to like a pyramid scheme where people aren't actually creating a market for products that people want to buy. Instead, they're creating a market to entice other people to buy the product so that the people at the top of the chain can make money. And I'm not saying that's what's happening. I have no idea. But if that were the case, that there's this disproportionate amount of money spent not for a business purpose for new GTLDs, but just to protect, you know, their IP rights, that strikes me as very problematic.
Lorraine, thank you. I think we would have members that agree with you, and what I would do is I would really encourage this review team to look not only at the numbers but at the anecdotal evidence because, true or not, the perception in the trademark community is that's exactly what's happening, that this is a money machine for ICANN. But this is a printing press for ICANN. I've heard it dozens of times from my membership. Now, do numbers substantiate that? I don't know. That's what we're all here to find out. So I welcome that. What I would ask the group, too, is when you come up with these questions, maybe the group could put together a question sheet, a question communication, send it to me. That would be helpful. So we have it written down so we can think about how to approach some of these issues. And I saw that Kai had put into the chat that he wasn't sure whether or not the results of this communication, this study, were going to be included in your report. And I would strongly recommend that they are, because the whole point of doing the report, having you guys see it first, we actually, for the comments that we're submitting next week, we're not going to reference the report very specifically, simply because our comments were drafted before the report was released, because it was today. We will reference it very generally, but in terms of the deep dive, the understanding from us was, from INTA, that if we invested this time and money, that if we showed you the results, we worked closely, that these results would be included in the final report rather than as appended comments. Because I think there's a higher value when the results are inside the report rather than appended as a comment.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. I think your understanding matches mine as well. This is Jordan Buchanan again, that we intend to examine your report and use it as an input into our report. It may be that we don't include the report itself as an attachment or something like that, but certainly the findings in your report are, I think, valuable to our own investigation and will be considered as we put together our own findings and recommendation. I'm just going to make one quick comment on the point that Laureen was just making. I think we'll need to think through the numbers a little bit more, but I note that if it's true that brands are spending on the order of 7% of their total expenditure on new GTLDs, whereas we see in the overall marketplace something like 12% of GTLD registrations are new GTLDs, it means that relative to the marketplace as a whole, brands actually have a smaller fraction of their portfolio in new GTLDs than the general sort of global market, which is not surprising if they're only viewing it as a defensive purpose. But it certainly, the implication from that to me is certainly not that the majority certainly not the entirety of the activity in the new GTLDs is defensive energy by brands, since there's a larger fraction of the total marketplace than what brands are purchasing in terms of their new GTLD portfolios. But we'll need to take a closer look at the data and intersect it with the other bits that we've seen before drawing strong conclusions. I would agree with the general observation that if it were true that all of the activity were defensive registrations by brands, that would be not very productive, and that's why we've called out defensive registrations as a negative effect on the program. I think Carlos has his hand up, so I'm going to move on to him, and then I may. Well, we probably don't have time for more questions, but Lori, we will put them together in a written form to follow up on. Go ahead, Carlos. You'll be the last question, and then we're going to allow Jean-Baptiste to give us a couple updates.
Thank you very much, Jordan. I just want to keep track. I thank you, Lori, for the comments. I think she explained it very, very well as well. I just want to make sure that we keep track of this discussion brands in a structured way within the review team. I know we are out of the drafting period and so on, but I really want to have a discussion. I mean, how much can we attribute to the expansion of the GTLD, and how much is part of the brand portfolio strategy? I mean, what's the value of having 10 different brands of washing powder? that's a marketing decision of the brand operators, and they came first. And if they want to keep 10 brands, well, they have to keep 10 different marketing strategies and 10 different TLDs. I would like just to leave a placeholder open for our discussion here, and I thank you very much.
Thanks, Carlos. Lori, feel free to react. I will note that I've been told that Jean-Baptiste's updates are quite short, so if anyone else has any other questions, we can probably entertain one or two more. Lori, feel free if you have any reaction to Carlos's statement, I guess.
Right. I guess my only thought is to the choice. Yes, you're right. Why would brands make 10 different varieties of soap unless there's a market for those 10 different varieties? And you can certainly extend that over to new GTLDs. But I think we have to look, you know, factually, too, at what's happening. You know, are they, from a brand perspective, are these new GTLDs being implemented by brands in a marketing strategy? And generally, it looks like they're not. So even though a brick-and-mortar company may be making 10 brands of soap, they may not think they need 10 domain names to do so. I mean, every company has a different strategy on how they use their names. I mean, when I used to manage domain portfolios, I mean, those are some of the decisions that you make. Do you have one overarching homepage with your umbrella brand, whatever that is, and all your sub-brands are underneath, or do you decide your sub-brands are all going to have separate and unique identifying websites and web pages? I will tell you, and others who are practicing trademarks and a little closer to it, because I'm a little far removed from it in the last few years, is that, you know, the trend has always been you want to keep your market as focused and as targeted as possible. And splitting up the market into, you know, many, many different websites and many, many different domain names that have to be remembered by the consumer is not necessarily a good marketing tool. And then for others, it might be, you know, if you're running a promotion or a specific campaign, and it's very important that campaign, so you'd have, you know, LoriSoap.campaign versus LoriSoap.com, you know, then that makes sense. So every decision is going to be based on a marketing need, and where the difficulty is for trademark owners is, how do you anticipate that marketing need when you have hundreds of new GTLD laws launched with potentially millions of variations on your name, particularly if you have a very popular name, and I have managed highly recognized names, it becomes very frustrating and very expensive very quickly. And, you know, some of this is supported by the data, some of it may not. And, again, that's what our responsibility as INTA is, to get honest data and report it fairly and in the interest of our members. And for you as a CCTRT to look at the data overall and figure out where all this fits in.
All right. Thanks, Lori. We do have time for one more question from David, who had his hand up, or not if you don't have a question anymore, David. David's back. So go ahead, David.
I am. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
No. Oh, you can. Okay, good. No, I was just thinking that, just listening to the discussion as well, and I thought one of the data points which we could maybe look at, which we could get, is if you look at any brand that exists, call it super brand, and we carry out a search across all the TLDs to see how many times the actual brand owner has registered it in the new GTLDs and how many times it's been abused with some third party registering it, and how many times it hasn't been registered, so it's just open. It would be an interesting data just to see what that spread is and whether a brand is accepting a level of abuse, or whether there's, you know, very little abuse because it's just been left blank and no one's actually registering, or very few registrations are out there for that brand. And I was just thinking there's actually some objective data which we could probably get quite easily. So it's just a thought, just listening to our discussion then.
Yeah, thanks, David. I think that's right. I think analysis group already has that first set of data from the TMCH review that they did. And then separately, we obviously know the list of, for example, UDRP cases. And so we could intersect those and see if there's a correlation between them or not. I'm not sure who would do that work, but it seems possible to do. So that would, I guess, ask the question is, of are defensive registrations worth it, right? All right, so I don't see, assuming that's an old hand from Maureen, I don't see any other questions. So I'm going to go ahead and thank Lori for her participation today and INTA for putting together the survey. And we'll go ahead and pass the baton to Jean-Baptiste to give us updates on the public comment period and the draft report. Thanks, Laurie.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you, Laurie, as well, for the presentation. So moving on to the overview of public comments received, so I'm afraid there is not so much update on that. We still have received just two comments that were not received this month. So I invite you to share again around the public comment page that I've just put in the chat. And just a reminder that in 9 days will be the close date of the public comment period. Moving on to the draft report, I just wanted to give you a quick update. You all have received on Monday in your inbox the Word version and the process on draft report updates that was adopted on the plenary call last week. So both of these documents have been saved on the wiki. I will place the link as well in the chat. I invite you for any updates that you might have to always use the Word version that is saved on the wiki that will make sure that you have the most recent versions. Yes, Kylie, I see that you have a question.
Hi, yes, it's about other business. Last time we said that we were going to talk about parking this time.
Yeah, Kylie, it's Jordan. Unfortunately, I didn't update the parking paper in time to have people review it this week, and plus we have the INTA survey, so we pushed the parking topic one more week to next week.
Okay. But anyway, yesterday, well, about 10 days ago, I asked everybody about about parking for China, because we're already doing a review on the impact of parking on the Latin America and Caribbean region. Responding to that request, Stan did some calculation using available data on China, and so yesterday I sent everybody an email about this, mostly that is Stan's calculation. So I just wonder, everybody has seen it, and if we can just include those calculations by Stan within our report, just similar to for the LAC region. So that is just my request, and thank you.
Jordan. Yeah, thanks, Kylie. We'll have it's a good reminder for everyone to take a look at the recent discussion on parking. We'll make sure to include that Stan's updated calculations in the discussion next week. All right, Jean-Baptiste, anything else from your side?
Yes, I just had a quick question. So on this version that was shared, you may have seen that there were footnotes that were redesigned, and I just wanted to know whether you had any questions on these and whether we could consider them as adopted.
I think the stunning silence you're hearing, Jean-Baptiste, is that people haven't probably had a chance to look at the footnotes in particular, so I think we'll just take this as a recommendation that everyone review that particular aspect of the new draft report before the next call.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, we have about a minute left. Any other business, or we can wrap up a tiny, tiny bit early? Kylie and Waldo are both typing, so I'll give them a few seconds to finish doing that. All right, Kylie made a further note about parking, and Waldo apologizes for being stuck on another call. So we'll go ahead and wrap up today's call. Thanks everyone for your participation, and look forward to another vigorous discussion of parking on next week's call. Thanks again, Laurie and INTA for the discussion today. Bye everyone.
Thanks.